Folks, welcome to Redneck Country Podcast, the podcast where we're hanging out, sitting around a campfire, having a good time, just sharing some stories, cutting each other up, and hopefully trying to learn from our failures, our mistakes, and our successes. And we hope to pass that on to you. We get to hope to learn from you as well. Anybody that calls in and shares some of their stories or their mistakes that we can learn from and carry on and hopefully build this community a little bit bigger. And where we're carrying on this week is from part one last week, which was our controlled hunt where we shut down the bow season here in Ontario, Canada, and we break out the boomsticks for Scott and I and some other real rednecks around our family. What that means is muzzleloader only, and for Bill Tom and his family and friends up north, what that means is a little different rifle than what we got with our one-shot wonders. So with no further ado, if you want to pick up from last week, we are tracking Scotty's buck. So I'm going, there's a lot of blood, but if that buck made it up that 100 and whatever yard, almost straight incline ravine, hole, and blood quit. So we had blood all the way for 100 yards to the bottom of that side hill where he went up, and the blood stopped. And I'm thinking, Scotty, if he hit him with even one of the three shots, which he did because we had blood up till that buck should not be able to make it up that side hill without pumping some serious blood out. And there was
It was easy to trail that deer. Oh, there was a lot of blood.
Not up that side hill.
No, not up.
There was not
the side
a
hill.
Spot of blood up that whole side hill. It quit when he went
to that
up.
Point. Yeah.
So it's like the blood would have had to fill that lung cavity area, right? And then and come out the hole. And right. Maybe with the incline that buck was moving on, the blood came down to the bottom of the cavity, never hit the hole to come out. But we went up that side hill slow as possible, trying to follow his tracks, but I mean, it's a deer highway, so there's tracks all over the place on the side hill.
Sure. And which track and we, are you gonna follow?
Yeah, we
right?
spread That's out right. and not a lick of blood that whole thing. So we were a good, I would say, half an hour to 40 minutes going up that side hill and starting to lose faith.
Absolutely.
And not a spot of blood. So what else do you do? Well, we find the guy and we're going like, was he over here? Oh, he might have been over that way a bit more. So I mean, we canvassed it. And when we got to the top, we're walking. And walked all the way there. It's nothing but ragweed at the top. And the ragweed this year has got to be 4 feet tall. Like, it would cover all the way to a doe's back with just a head sticking out. Like, it was tall. So now we're walking the ragweed trying to find it. And so then I walked over to the edge where there was a pretty good deer run. Once you get to the top, almost the top of that ravine, there was kind of like a little bit of a lip where you could see it would be easier walking for them. So there was a little path cut and go into the ragweed. Well, I had a spot of blood. So, okay, we got blood.
Game on. Yeah.
So we're back.
Back
so
in business.
Found that. So then we went through the ragweed and it wasn't a lot of blood, but we were finding where the ragweed would touch the buck's side, you'd see little bits of blood. So that took us probably another, what, Scott, 20 minutes to get from about 10, 15 yards through that ragweed. Yep. And then we lost it probably 5 yards before the corn. And we're like, there's no more blood. Well, what are we going to do? So we walked the edge of the corn and I went to the edge of the ravine thinking it might have dropped back down after it went up over a hip. And then Scott found blood on the corn. Hey, there's blood over here. So ran it. Well, now we're grinning because now there's no leaves on the ground inside there. Now it's corn stalks. And corn stalk leaves. And so now, I mean, that was the easiest track job at that point because
once
now
you got to that point, you're good.
Oh, every 3-4 steps, there's blood. Yeah. So way we go. But oh, was I so amazed. Dad is up in a tree stand up on top of that hill. And I mean, an easy 1,500 yards from Scott, who was down the bottom. Easy. And that buck went up that side hill and it went, I don't even know, it went past Dad's tree stand in the corn. And so we're following, and we don't even know because we're in the corn. I mean, the corn's
sure,
tall.
You can't see.
Yeah, and our head's down. Man, we're following blood. So we finally get to a spot where it looks like it stood, and there's a good 4 to 5 inch circle of blood. Okay, there's no more. And I was kind of leading. Scott was kind of behind me. I was just firing through. There's no more. And when I lose it, I say, okay, Scott, don't move. You're on the last spot of blood. And I would, okay, got some here. Let's keep going. And so we did that through it. And then there's some spots where, you know, the corn didn't grow and you had like a little grassy meadow in there. You could tell they were bedding down. Well, then it would be a little trickier because you'd have to find the blood down on the grass, but then you'd get to the corn again and away you go. And you could kind of see the deer runs. So you'd follow that. So we get to all the way, we're past Dad's stand without even knowing it. I mean, we are a long ways in. And then this spot of blood is it. And it's a good 4 to 5 inch circle and that's it. And no more blood. So I said to Scott, you stay there. So I go all the way and I walked a good 50 yards up that corn row. No blood. I'm looking 2-3 rows each side. No blood. So I walked back and I said, okay, I'm going to put my toque on this corn stalk. Don't go too far from it. But you go that way, I'll go three rows this way and see what we can see and start making bigger circles. So I go, I get three rows over and I hear, hey, Todd, where are you? Todd. And he wasn't waiting for me to respond. And I'm looking for blood. And so he's panicked. Where are you? And I'm right here. And as the minute I said, I'm right. What the fuck? I almost jumped out of my skin. What the heck? I'm like, what was that? Did you get him? Did you hit it? And he goes, I think so. So I'm
was it the buck? I have no idea.
I was like, was that the buck? I don't know. So I go rushing over as fast as I'm trashing corn. And I get over there and he's standing there and sure enough there was a deer. I look past him down the row and it ran 20 yards and fell over. And I said, well, there it is. Was that the buck? I don't know, he says. He goes, all I was doing was, where's Todd? I got to take this shot. He was standing three rows over from Scott, staring at him, just standing there. And so Scott was concerned. Obviously, we're in the corn. Where are you? The sure, minute I answered, come
on. On the other side of that deer.
Oh, no, that's smart.
Which I wasn't, and he knew, but it was, I felt, this is why I hunt with Scott. I feel okay to do it where maybe some guys wouldn't. We are that cautious. No animal's worth somebody's leg life.
No, you absolutely need to be.
Yeah, so I'm impressed that he did that, but I couldn't figure out why he's yelling for me. I'm like, did you fuck? Holy jeez. So anyway, we go up, it ran 20 yards and keeled over, crashed in the corn, took out a row, go over in.
So that was shot number four.
And that was shot four. And there was three bullets in it. So he missed with one. His third shot he missed when it was standing there. So the first shot.
There was one right smack dab in the shoulder.
It was right,
where
yeah.
It was supposed to go.
So, and you would think, but at 30 yards, it must have. It looked like when we gutted it. Now, you couldn't tell because that last shot messed up some stuff. Yeah. But it looks like it only penetrated one lung.
One lung.
So then the second shot.
And it went through.
No, at 30 yards, the bullet was in it.
No, they don't go through. They never, very rare do they ever.
Very, yeah, often at that, they would be in the skin on the other side. Like when we cleaned my doe and I shot her 60, 70, it was in her skin on the opposite side.
Yeah. Like you say that. I shot my doe last year, I shot at 120 yards through and through shot.
Really? What do you use? What's your bullet?
Well, I'm 30-06, 165 grain Remington core lock.
Smokeless powder. Smokeless powder. Well, that thing's zinging.
Yeah, but I shot my buck last year from a tree stand, say a similar scenario, and it was, I don't know, call it 70 yards.
Yeah.
Went in, didn't go out.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the difference was. Both deer died, don't get me wrong. One virtually had no blood. My buck had no blood trail at all. Until we picked him up from the ground. There was not one drop of blood, which then gets your heart and head going at the same time. But
sure it does.
You know, my brother, he shot a 30-06, 185 green Remington core lock at his buck this year, through and through shot. And about the same. It was, I think he said it was about 80 yards that he shot his deer at too. So that 30 yards, I'm surprised that didn't go through.
Yeah, right. When you place it right in the shoulder, I'm 100% confident it's not going through. You're always gonna catch it on the in between the skin on the other side.
Well, and you know what?
The black powder is slow too, right?
Yeah, it is slow. Like 1,400 feet a second.
Not even. Yeah, like I'm Googling right now. I got Pirate X with a 335 grain Sabot. And Pirate
335?
X. Yeah, which is heavier than ours. But they're moving 1240. So maybe ours are moving around 1400, 1300 to 1400 feet per second.
Yeah. As my black powder, I shoot a 250 shockwave with two, it's 100 grains worth of powder in my
Pirate X pellets,
Yep. And I've shot through and through, and I shot one that actually didn't
go through.
So, yeah. So, yeah, the doe I shot from Tristan during the late season muzzleloader up north, it was a through-and-through shot. So, yeah. I guess just – but I didn't hit bone. But the doe I shot this year went through the shoulder at 65 yards or 80 yards, whatever it was, and the bullet did not go through that deer.
Yeah.
So I guess it's that shoulder takes up a lot of energy.
I think it does. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and for it to only hit one lung at 30 yards, that's not right. In my books, that's not right. At 30 yards, at 295 grain bullet, the kinetic energy on that sucker coming out at 1300 feet per second, it should have busted bone and kept on a trucking.
Yeah, sure.
My mind, like that just blows my mind. But it must have hit one lung. The next shot he took out its armpit,
yep.
Which I would say was probably the best thing that he did with that second shot, because when the blood was hitting the ragweed and the leaves, I believe that's what was leaving a good enough trail to follow, because when you one lung a buck, you're only going to get blood drops when that cavity fills up.
That's right.
And when I took that second shot, it was quartering away really, really hard. So it was really hard to tuck that bullet into the lung or the heart. Bill?
You hear the excuses?
Yeah, the excuses.
Totally.
were you standing too?
Yeah. I mean, was I standing? Everything slowed down.
I was standing.
He looked at me like Neo.
Around a little.
Oh, yeah. You know, buck fever kicked in.
He looked at me like he was Neo from The Matrix, and he put his hoof way up over his head really slow, and that bullet just grazed his armpit as he went onto his back. And then he climbed a tree with his back hooves, flipped off of that up to top of the ravine, and disappeared into the corn.
And there he was.
And then the last shot, he it was running away. Like, kind of, well, I don't even know. It looked like, and you could better answer this, Scott, but it looked like it ripped in from below the shoulder or below the armpit and right up and split him and smashed right through everything. Just done.
Right to the brisket. So, well, he won't go that far if he's got that many holes in him, that's
so,
for sure.
Yeah, so when we were done, after Scott took that shot, I called Dad, and Dad, what the heck's going on? Because now we went from 1,500 yards anyway to the in front of Dad. Now we're way past him in the corn. He had no clue where we were, right?
We're three or four hours later now.
Oh, yeah, and worry that we were going to get shot because we weren't that close to him, right? Like, he's not shooting in our direction and that, but the sound is now behind him. So he had no idea that was us.
That's right.
And his hard of hearing anyway. So we call him and we're like, did you hear that shot? Yeah, it was behind me. Yeah, that's us. What do you mean? Where are you guys? We're way back here in the corn. That thing almost ran all the way back to the barns.
Yep. We would have been awesome if it did.
So, yeah, right? So then it became crap. Now we're in the middle of this freaking cornfield. And we got to get him out.
And it absolutely amazes me how fast and how far they go.
So
from the time you took the shot to the time it got to the top of the hill, it seconds.
They can maybe boogie, a minute. Right?
What's that?
They can boogie. And if you blow off a shoulder, they can boogie just as good as they can with four legs.
That's right.
Well, the best part about that story is there was a happy ending. You got it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
100%.
Yeah, it was actually a fun track job. I normally cringe on track jobs because
I love track jobs. I like being the forensic guy getting down on my hands and knees looking for that.
I do.
Chip sized drop of blood
when it's over, but during,
my gosh,
especially when the blood peters out and you're going, oh, like a one lung buck. We have tracked them for concessions and not found them before.
Oh yeah.
You drive an arrow into a shoulder and just barely catch a lung. And then you know it's a lung because 4,000 yards, two concessions, or 82 kilometers away, you get a little bit of lung butter. And you're like, well, you know, you got a lung, but there's no way you got both if he's gone this far. And then it just peters out and you never find him. And you know he's probably going to die. As bad as that is, the sound. You just, but this one, I didn't mind this one, but I normally cringe on going, oh, crap. I do like finding blood. I mean, that's invigorating, right? Oh, I got my blood. I got blood. No. Oh.
Yeah, that's right. I'll get the spirits up in a hurry.
Yeah, we did that. You know,
The funny thing.
Sorry, go ahead. No, you go, Bill.
Yeah, so the funny thing is when my brother took a shot at that buck, he's never shot horns per se. He shot a little wee tiny spiker, which was legal enough. Like, it was just big enough to be legal. We measured it. We had a doe tag in our camp just to be safe. We put a doe tag on it, but it was big enough just to be a legal buck. And in 16 years of hunting, that's as big a deer as he's ever shot.
Really?
He shot lots of does. He shot lots of, he sees deer all the time. But he's never, ever been able to capitalize on that big, big deer. So this year was his year. And like I said, Tuesday afternoon, right at that prime time when you know something's going to happen, I hear the shot go off. And then I hear a second shot go off. I'm like, my brother's type of kid that usually shoots till the gun's empty. Unless in front of him. So, all right, well, two shots. Let's see what happens. And he texts me right away. Yeah, it was me. I think it was a good shot, but the deer is not down. Okay, no problem. So my buddy, TJ, my dad, and I kind of meet up at the ATVs and go over to him. We walk over because we don't want to take the ATVs because we might push the deer that is not down yet, right? And we get there, and my brother is sitting at the base of his tree stand. I'm like, did he fall out of his tree stand? Because typically we tell him, sit in your tree stand until we get there. Then you get down. Then we go for a walk.
Now, can you repeat that one more time for Scott, Bill?
I think I need to hunt with your brother. You guys wait way too long.
But the only reason why he got down is because he was shaking so bad he couldn't sit up in the tree stand anymore.
No doubt. So, that is awesome.
He was pretty well. He had most of his outside layer stripped off. He had his orange on. And I thought he was going to be sick. He was sitting on the ground with his legs up and his head down. I'm like, what's going on? That was a big deer. I'm like, okay, tell me the story. And he tells me, well, these four deer come in. They're about 150 yards out off my right, and all I can see is, he said, you remember on the farm, he says, when the bull comes out with the big neck and all you can see is the neck. He says, that's what that deer looked like coming through the bush. And I said, oh. I said, then what? He says, well, it stopped and it made a scrape right out in front of him. And the does are around him. And I'm like, okay, well, he says, I got the gun up and I'm waiting. And he comes parallel to me. And he's about 90 yards out there now. And okay, flip the safety off and he's broadside, take a shot and one jump and he's gone. I'm like, you kidding me? He says, no, I put it right on his front shoulder. Everything was good. And he took one bound and he was gone. I'm like, what was the second shot? Well, there was a second buck. I'm like, are you kidding me? He says, no, this was a real tall four pointer that came in. So after the first deer came in, that buck jumped two bounds away and just stood there broadside at 110 yards or whatever it was. And I took a shot at it. I'm like, okay, did you hit it? I have no idea. So you're talking about blood. So he says, okay, where did you shoot this deer? And I walked right up to the spot where he says he shot it. No blood at all. Nothing. Not a drop of blood. So we look and we look. Well, and then we find a track. We follow the track. Well, now it goes down into a ravine, which the base of this ravine is a swamp.
Oh,
great. That's exactly where that deer went. So we get going down the hill, and sure enough, at the bottom of the hill, one drop of blood. Look to my left, white belly showing. And that, yeah, exactly. Now he's freaking out, happy and excited and stuff like that. Back up a little bit. We were 10 yards to the left of where he pulled the trigger. No blood. We go back and do a little bit of a drag up the hill, and there was blood everywhere. But we were 10 yards too far, and there was not a drop, right?
Yeah, so. I did the same on that big doe that I had shot when it I went and I'm looking for blood, and it was getting dark, and I couldn't find blood. But I swore I heard her crash and slide down the ravine. And when I went down, I could see the white belly, so I found her. And I swore there, I said, there's no blood. That was it. Yeah. But then when I went back to grab my crap, I've seen her steps, and it was nothing. It looked like a slaughterhouse all the way back. Yeah. My track job sucked.
Yeah, well, that's it. We went in the direction of where that second buck that he took a shot at, too, and we looked and circled and went. And you could see in the ground where it he missed clean. There's no way that he hit that deer. He was too pumped up. He was swinging, swinging from left to right at the deer. The deer was standing broadside, yes, but he shot up and to the right. I'm convinced, because you could see where it planted in the ground and took a jump to the left, and then you could see the tracks as it was running down the road. Yeah, and there was not even a drop.
Nothing.
So,
yeah,
but anyways, that's my story.
That's awesome. Well, we had one more we had to do a track job on, and I was nervous. My dad's buddy Bob. I mean, it took us till Saturday night to get our fifth, or to fill that five tags, which is unheard of for us. I mean, we're normally done.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if you're pushing it. And so Saturday night, we were all up in our stands and heard a shot, and I forgot, because I had took Scott's climber into the corn, just off the corn on the ledge where I figured they were coming in and out of the corn, which I figured was my only shot now. I mean, it's Saturday. I'm grasping at straws. And he was right below me in the ravine. I mean, he's hundreds of yards away, but I'm way up on top. So he's essentially right below me through thicket. And all of a sudden, right before dark, this gunshot goes off, and holy jumping, it was like right below me. I almost fell out of the tree stand. And I'm like, oh, somebody over there just shot one. And I'm like, wait a minute. Bob's over there.
Yeah.
So Bob comes up, because Bob is technologically not savvy. We'll say that.
Yeah.
So Bob ain't answering his phone. Bob's not answering text messages. So Bob meets us at the truck. He's talking to the landowner when I get out from the long walk, and he had driven up from the bottom and come down the long lane. And I walked over and I gave him a big hug and I said, I know that was you, so let's go find your deer, Deadeye. Oh, I don't know, Toddy. I'm thinking we should give it the night. He come out and he was, I don't know. So I said, oh, well, let's go find him. So
it was a buck.
Yeah, that's the funny part. He was a buck. He was that same buck that Scotty seen. Scotty actually, sorry, let's rewind. The day before, Bob had seen a buck and pushed it. And Scott could see it from his tree stand, but was nowhere near close enough. And it was in the meadow under a tree stand that nobody was hunting. So Scott, being the Chris Farley ninja style that he is, decides to get down and put the sneak on. And that didn't happen. But Bob then took that stand that it was under. So he was adamant that it was this buck. And so I said, well, I had a coyote walk right 10 yards underneath me, and it was a nice coyote. I mean, it was full, and some people, a lot of people would have shot it. Maybe someday I will. I always said, I'm not going to shoot something I'm not going to eat. So I let it go. And then some people say, oh, it's a deer killer. And then some people say, well, you need them to keep the disease down so they don't get overpopulated. Yeah. So I'm still in turmoil whether I shoot coyotes or not. So I let it go. And it was a very nice looking. I've had some mangy coyotes, but this thing was, it was fat, thick, full coat. Yeah, it was healthy. So I said,
done the
to
hide
Bob,
on it for you.
What's that?
I would have done the hide on it.
Oh, for now you tell me. Even with a 50 caliber hole through it.
Yeah, that might be a sewing job for my wife.
So I just had let that walk. And so I said to Bob, I said, we can let it sit for the night, but I'm really concerned with the weather starting to get, it's now Saturday and it'd been friggin' cold, starting to get a little bit warmer. They're out on the prowl. And I just don't know, Bob. There's so many coyotes around. So we'll just go. So Scotty says, no, we're going to go look. We're just going to go look. We'll take a quick look. We don't see. Well, we'll leave. We'll just take a quick look. So, okay. So away we go. So Bob shows us where he's in the stand. Well, it turned out it was only what, Scott, a 60-yard shot?
Yeah, it was a close shot.
And he didn't know which way it went in the woods. He just said it jumped and, boom, took off into the bush. So, well, there's no blood. I mean, he came back with a piece of little old corn stalk from that field, and the field had been plowed. But he came back with a piece of little corn stalk that had a drop of blood on it. He brought that with him. So he knew he hit it.
You're right.
So I said, well, you hit it. So, and I know it, typically if Bob shoots, Bob will kill the deer. Yes. It's just whether Bob shoots. So, and I call him Deadeye for a reason. So I said, like, no, you got blood, Deadeye. We're going down to find this deer. So away we go. And Scott convinced, yep, we're going to do it. So away we go. So there's no other blood other than that stalk that he took. Well, he brought it. So now it's dark.
Where did you pick this up?
Where did you shoot this deer? So now we've got a whole bunch of deer trails. Which one did it? Well, we're down one of these. I know, but there's only two of us, and you need to stand here. I mean, he's 74, I think. I don't know. And, Bob, okay, not a problem. Scott, you pick a path, I pick a path. And away we go. So I walked in. I was probably 40 yards from the field before. Yep. And all of a sudden, I got blood. I had a good amount of blood. But, I mean, it was 40 yards from the edge of that field. And I was losing hope because I'm just walking deer run. And at that point, you are just walking a deer run.
For sure.
Right? There's no blood. There's so many deer hooves. Is this the one he shot at? Like, we don't even know where it went in the woods.
Yeah. You're not there to know where it went. You're going off his story.
Right? Yeah. Not a clue. But now, boom, I got blood. So Scott come over. Well, then it wasn't 10 more steps and there's white belly. So I went down and there it was. It was good size. So Scott, here it is. So Scott caught up to me before Bob did. Yep. All right. Well, let's figure out how we're dragging this guy out. So we look. And it was a doe.
So a doe. Bob goes, he said he shot a buck.
Yeah. So and it was the buck they seen. So Bob, and honestly, Bob is the best guy in the world. You can't he's get awesome. A nicer guy than Bob. And I love funning with him because he'll just smile and head down and laugh and just take it. And he is honestly, you could not get him to say a bad thing about a soul. Just nope, wouldn't never. Happen. He's just that nice of a guy. So nice. He lets big bucks walk. So anyway, he comes, did you guys find it? And Scott, without missing a beat, says, everything but the antlers.
Shot the antlers off it.
Bob says, what? And Scott had to explain, it's a doe, Bob. Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was Buck. And that was number five. Then we were out. I shot a doe. Well, Scotty shot two. Bob shot two. And that was our five.
Well, that makes for a good season when everything's filled and now you can sit back and enjoy the venison.
No.
Do you just do your own butchering or do you take it?
No, we got a guy actually owns a butcher shop. And we used to have various guys do it, or girls, or people, or folks, or them people, whatever you want to say. And years and years ago, Dad talked to a butcher buddy of his where he buys his meat and says, yeah, well, if I take a butcher block home, he's not legally allowed to take it into the store. But if he takes one of his old big butcher block tables home and he can do it in his garage. So we made a deal with him many years ago. And we pay, what, $75 a deer, Scott?
$75 a deer.
Which I think is pretty good, regardless of size. So which we think is pretty good. But the best part is we used to go, and the butchers we've used in the past, I remember saying, well, there's this many of us, so we need this many roasts, we need this many chops, we've got to divvy it up, right? And then do the rest in hamburger scraps or whatever we tell them. And this guy, what I like is he says, no. I know what's supposed to be what. So you will get what I give you. You divvy it up from that. So you're not getting the butcher trying to get as many chops as we tell him. Sure. So he's cutting up like a rump roast into chops. Yep. And then you're eating chops that are technically should have been a roast. Right. Yep. So I found that him doing that, the meat, when we cook it, and that it is much like a roast is a roast. Chops are chops.
That's the best way. Cause a butcher should know what he could get out of an animal.
You got her.
Based on what we see in the front and how much is going to be weighed. And we did the same. We take our deer to it's a guy up in Ottawa Valley that has a garage, and in his garage, he's got the setup. Cause you're right. You can't take it to his butcher shop.
No,
but he takes it and does it in the garage, and that's his Christmas money, right? So,
yeah.
And he's phenomenal. He is anywhere from $65 a deer up to $75, depending on size.
Oh, that's
he's
cool.
Fair.
Yeah,
he's everything that we want. We just tell him we'd like some chops, burgers, steaks, and maybe tip roast, whatever. And he's yep, no problem. And we come back, and he's got it all prepackaged, frozen, and. Within 24 hours, that deer is done, ready to go.
Yeah, our guy did all five. We dropped him off at noon. We picked him up at 7:30 at night, and at 4 o'clock he had to go out for curling or something. So he had them done prior to that. We went back at 7:30, and we actually divvied them up in the boxes in his garage, and then away we went.
Yep.
So he did them all right then, right that day.
You guys cut tenderloins out for yourselves, or you put those with the deer?
he cuts them out, and then he puts three red tags on the tenderloins, so we know what are the tenderloins.
Yeah, we typically cut the we always cut the tenderloin out before they go to the butcher shop.
Do you?
And
yeah,
that's kind of, yeah. And we take them, and that's our Thursday night meal.
All right, so
we plan our meals around the fact that, good Lord willing, we're going to be successful, we're also eating leftovers.
If not, you're going to be skinny.
Yeah, exactly. So we had three tenderloins that we took out, and obviously the three hunters take a tenderloin home to their families, and then nice. The other tenderloin stays in the camp, and we have a charcoal barbecue celebration with, you know, whatever, salads and squash and food that we take off the land. So yeah, no, so that's kind of a prize and a coveted deal that we always have on a Thursday night at the hunt camp is tenderloin night. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, fortunate enough to get some nice meat.
So. We divvy up the tenderloins, but mine right now are, and they didn't hit the freezer. They're getting marinated as we speak. They are in a baggie with olive oil and rubbed in salt, kosher salt.
Yep.
I had I made backstrap chops last night for supper, and they were never frozen, straight from the butcher, marinated.
What'd you marry him in?
Mesquite. It's the best.
You know what's really funny about that whole story right there, Bill?
What?
I had homemade pizza last night, and I didn't get a phone call.
No? I, you know what, Todd? I had venison teriyaki for dinner last night.
Screw you guys.
I'm just saying.
Okay, well, I have a roast right now that's in a big, large bag of olive oil and kosher
salt.
And
you're not inviting us.
I've got four chops and two tenderloins. And screw you guys.
Yeah,
and I'm going to go live on Facebook for every forkful into my mouth.
I'm just going to show up.
I'll be there.
I'm 2 minutes away.
My wife will let him in.
Yeah, that's Sunday night for us. My dad's coming down to hang out with me for the weekend, my kids for the weekend. And Candace and I got a Christmas party we're going to. But Sunday night, I'm taking out some chops. I'm going to take out that tenderloin that we got. Yeah, get the charcoal barbecue up, and it's a venison night on Sunday.
Right on.
That's awesome.
And I was in the habit of injecting them with, I was told that there's no fat in venison, right? Like, I mean, that's a given. Like when you got beef, you have fatty tissue all through the meat. Like very, it's minuscule, but it's there, and which tenderizes it, right? Plus the fat on the outside. When with venison, that I was told, and I'm no butcher, but I was told that those fat tinues in the meat, or whatever you want to call them, aren't there. So the meat doesn't get tender on its own very easily when you cook it or when you just let it sit. So you need to get something acidic into the meat so it breaks it down and makes it tender. So last couple of years, I've been injecting it with orange juice and liquid smoke, if I wasn't going to use the smoker, and it tuned out pretty good. But then I just messaged Nick Abermach, who happens to be a chef with the US or the Canadian Coast Guard, right, Scotty?
Yep.
And as well as a fishing guide. And right now he's slaughtering massive ducks. And so shooting being ducks. The chef, I asked him, and he's like, oh, just take olive oil and kosher salt and rub it in there and just let it sit, and then get it to room temperature. And then he says, if it's a roast, put it at 500 for 15 minutes and then knock it down to 300, 325, and then cook it to an internal temperature, whatever you prefer, right? Medium rare, whatever, 130, 135, right. 140. And so I did that for a roast, and oh my gosh, It was odd. Like, I was getting crazy with my concoctions, injecting it with orange juice, and then on the outside, balsamic vinegar, and putting it in a baggie for a week, and Montreal steak spice. But just that simple olive oil and kosher salt, like, oh, that was awesome.
Yeah. That's typically what we do too here. It's it's an olive oil, olive and grape oil mix that I coat it with, because it's got a different flash point than just olive oil.
Yeah.
You put it on the barbecue. Grapeseed oil or an olive oil mix is what it is. And then rub that down and put like Himalayan rock salt and pepper. Let it sit until it gets to room temperature. Throw it on the charcoal. sear both sides, and then indirect heat until it's to your desired doneness.
Yeah,
that's how. Put a little bit of.
I'm hungry, and I just
apple
ate.
Wood or something on there.
Yeah,
I did not yet. So
you haven't ate yet?
Nah, no.
Oh, and we're stealing all your time.
Yeah. So, Scotty, how was that 20 minutes?
Fantastic. It's a little. You know what? If I miss overtime tomorrow, I'm blaming you guys.
You can't miss overtime. You can't miss overtime from now till after Christmas. We have had this conversation. I'm not letting you fall off the wagon.
All right. Then you better get here at 4 a.m.
You want me to come wake you up? I can because I just go back to bed.
I'll text you.
Oh, that's awesome. So, yeah. So, anyway, we've got more tags, man. We're hitting the bow now.
Yep. Yeah, I'm done. I'm relying on my daughter and my wife because they both got tags. So with my daughter, she's got a doe tag for down here.
Will this be her first year?
It will be, yeah, because I'm going to sit there. She's been in the woods with me while I was she was an apprentice hunter at the time.
Yep.
But now being 16 years old, she was able to apply and get her own tag. So
fantastic.
I've been in the woods a couple of times where she's seen deer and not had an opportunity to shoot, but I'm hoping now we can late season get on some tracks, get on some late season activity. So
we'll see. On.
She's got a job now, and unfortunately when the kids get a job, the hunting at that age takes second priority to new shoes and new clothes and stuff. But we'll come back
around. And friends.
And friends,
teenagers.
Yeah. That's right. So all right, I thought we'd chat for tonight. We hadn't done this in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was good. Needed this.
Yeah, absolutely. Get your mind right. I'm hoping to hear some good stories from you guys after this weekend where you might have filled another tag.
We can't
hunt this weekend.
Still black powder right now.
Oh, still black powder.
The second controlled hunt time, we can't hunt bow during the controlled hunt.
Yep.
Oh, so you guys, they don't split them up where you are.
Yep.
So we got this early season. Go ahead.
This our first full week in November was controlled. Then the second week was deer or for bow. Sorry. Then the third week is for controlled hunt again. Fourth week is bow. Then the first week of December is controlled. So it's like every other week we can hunt.
Oh, I see. Well, make the most of it.
Yeah, but I tell you what, there's a giant 12 that the landowner has now seen. Looks like it survived the Orange Army from my Orange Army week, but this week I'm hoping he put down.
Can we flip a coin? Can we flip a coin for that stand?
We got to move it, Scotty.
No,
we do. We do. We got to move it towards the. So he's living down. I'm not going to say too much. Hopefully on here. I believe he's living in that little tiny section of bush, that little causeway, if you will, to the right. And he's coming across that open field to the woods we're in, and he's walking that edge, and then he cuts up towards the highway and down in the ravine. So, because there was, in the snow, the biggest freaking scrape, fresh, after the Orange Army. So I got out, I don't know what day it was that I went out, Saturday morning? Sunday morning?
Did you go?
I did. Saturday morning. It was Saturday morning. I went Saturday morning.
I didn't go Saturday morning. Oh, I went to work.
Yeah, you had overtime.
Yep.
And then you had your Christmas party Saturday night. So Saturday morning, I got up and it was cold, man. They said minus 18 with the wind chill. I was not warm. Yeah, I froze. I stuck it out till 9:30. But on my way walking in the fresh white snow on the edge of the field, and I had to walk past it because our tree stands 150 yards in. I had to go past this giant scrape in the snow, like snowbank made from this buck. So we got to move that stand. He's not coming in. There was no tracks in the snow back by our stand where we thought they were, where we had scrapes earlier in the season and rubs. Now, it's out there on the edge of the field, and then they're coming in where, and it looks like where the stand used to be is where they're cutting in.
So I'm going to throw something into your mind just to get you thinking, because that's what I like to do. Remember the last time you hunted not where you, in your stand, but up against a tree And what happened?
Yeah, I know. We moved that stand. That exact stand is the one we moved on now to go after this. Because I had the little spike come in and stare at me, and I had another little buck, and I had the four does, and I want that 12. So that's what I mean. When you know, and that's why no trail cameras in the black powder area, when you know there's a big boy, it puts something inside my brain that's just like, I want to figure him out. I want to figure out this woods, and I want to get in front of him. So now I'm looking and I'm walking through the woods figuring out, okay, where's his pitch point? Where is he moving? Where is he going through? Where is he coming out? Where is the opportunities? I thought we had it. I was wrong. So
that's
I'm thinking.
What makes this hunting.
Yeah. So I think
that's right.
If we don't get that stand moved this week, Scotty, which I'd like to do, it's going to be a climber 20 yards in from the edge of that bush all the way to the back.
Where are we getting a climber?
What's that?
Where are we getting a climber?
Your climber.
I know what you're talking about. My climber.
The best time.
And where are we putting it?
Yeah, we. I like. Oh yeah, we. Well, you can help me carry it in.
The first time you put the stand up, right? I love my climber for that reason.
I know.
You get into a spot. You get into a spot with your climber, and the best time to hunt it is the first time you're there.
The first time. Absolutely. I believe that 100%.
Do you really? Because I hate it. I do. I hate walking it. I hate carrying the darn thing. Especially this is way back, and now the field's plowed. It's not fun. So it's way back, and then you're making all kinds of racket, and you're sweating, and then, do I have them the sized right? Is this the good enough tree? Is this the right size tree when I get up there? Is the platform going to be like hanging way low and now I got to go all the way back down? And
and then you shoot and you're like, this was all.
What's that? Sorry.
Then you shoot your big buck and you say it was all.
You know what? And almost every archery deer I've put down has been out of Scotty's climber.
Yep. Out of my climber. I've had that climber forever. I've never shot a deer out of it.
No,
it's because he never gets to use it. I'm always in it. Scotty's too nice. He's got this really nice streak that if you know how to utilize it, you can get what you want. It's like we're married. No, it's not, because my wife has that, and then she knows I figured it out, so now she just hates me. Oh, too funny.
All right, awesome. Well, I better go get something to eat there.
Yeah, you go eat, on. Scott. You go to bed, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to chill.
All right.
Dream of a big deer.
Yeah, if we get some snow, I'm going after some rabbits, but now it's all melted.
Yeah, I need a rabbit or two, too.
Yep. I'd like to get out and do some rabbit hunting here, too. That's a topic for next Wednesday.
Agreed. If we get some snow, hopefully I'll have some stories. But I'll tell you, Monday morning, I'm going to be after Big 12.
Well, please keep me on your call list. And
oh, trust me, you'll know.
That'll be awesome. Well, best of luck, gentlemen, and we'll talk to you next week.
Everybody
have a good one. Yep,
bye.
Okay, that'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard. And Scott Goodall?
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire having some fun.